Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ronald White, who is the Director of Regulatory Policy at the Centre for Effective Government, where he focuses on the application of scientific information in the development and implementation of public health policy, with specific interests including air pollution policy, chemical and nanotechnology risks, and environmental justice. Ron also serves on the Department of Environmental Health Sciences, Epidemiology and Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and is a member of the State of Maryland Air Quality Control Advisory Council. Previously served in the Department of Environmental Health Services and Epidemiology at Johns Hopkins, where he also served as Deputy Director for the Johns Hopkins Risk Sciences and Public Policy Institute. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ronald White.
Thank you very much.
And is it true that regulations go to die at the White House?
Well, that certainly seems to have been the case. Certainly in the last several years, we haven't seen the kind of movement for regulations. In fact, we've seen the blockage of regulation through this centralized review office that exists in the White House called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which is part of the Office of Management and Budget, which, of course, controls all of the not only financial information for the executive branch of the government, but also reviews all of the regulations that government agencies, executive agencies produce. So they have a lot of control over whether regulations go forward or not, and certainly, in the last 3 years or so, we've seen a real lack of movement in some areas for really important regulations that are necessary to protect public health, welfare, and safety.
And is Cass Sunstein still in charge of that office?
No. He left last year, and he's been replaced by Howard Schlansky, is the name of the administrator of that office, of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And he did, as part of his confirmation, commit to moving regulations forward, and he came on board last summer of 2013 and has made some progress for some regulations that were stuck in some cases for a year or more in this review black hole. But frankly, not nearly as much progress as we continue to hope will take place, and certainly, there's a lot more regulations now that are still waiting to be important regulations that are waiting to be issued and finalized.
Well, it seems, though, that going back, for example, to the experience of Van Jones, who was hired as the White House green guy, and he's now on CNN's Crossfire. But he told me a long time ago when he got to the White House, he couldn't believe how the playing field was not level in terms of environmental lobbying, that essentially the room was full of executives and lobbyists from ExxonMobil, but there was barely an environmentalist to be seen. Is that the nature of Washington, that it's just so overwhelmed by money that you already, if you're working in the public interest, you're already at an incredible disadvantage?
Well, I think that certainly in terms of resources and in some cases access to the most senior level decision makers in the executive branch, that is the case. I think you are at a disadvantage, and I don't think that's a big secret. Clearly, money talks, and that's certainly the case with Congress and access and influence to a lot of congressional members. But even in the White House, I think there's certainly, in terms of the amount of information that they can receive, the amount of lobbying that they get from industry and their allies, far outweighs and overwhelms what can be done by the public interest groups. That said, I think the public interest groups, are as effective as they can potentially be, given the limited resources that we have, and I think we try to make the most from what we have, and frankly, what we have available to us is the support of the American people on all of these issues that we're weighing in on, because whether it comes to environmental protections or protection of the quality of the food and the safety of the food that people are eating, or whether it relates to abuses of financial practices across the board, the American people strongly support those kinds of protections. And so we're able to weigh in with real people at the grassroots levels who then really, you know, can explain why these things are so important. But it is an uphill fight. There's no question about it, that industry certainly has massive amounts of resources, and they deploy those resources to try and delay regulations or to change regulations so that it works to their advantage.
Again, I'm speaking with Ronald White, who's the Director of Regulatory Policy at the Center for Effective Government, where he focuses on the application of scientific information in the development and implementation of public health policy with specific interests, including air pollution policy, chemical and nanotechnology risks, and environmental justice. And the White House is well beyond these deadlines, aren't they, set by Congress in terms of implementing these rules? And we're talking about food safety rules, environmental rules, worker safety rules, and also Wall Street reform. So what's the sense of what these roadblocks are about? Are they about what we're talking about? The lobbyists just are able to gum up the works?
Well, I think in the last couple of years, leading up to the last election in 2012, I think there were certainly a major political calculus to the delays that were going on in some of these major rules that had consequences for big industry. And there was a report done by a independent governmental body called the Administrative Conference of the United States, and they actually issued a report late last year that looked into this issue of what was involved, what was behind the delays that occurred, let's say, from 2011 through the election period of 2012 and even into 2013. And what they found was that there were a series of factors that were involved with this office that I was mentioning before, this Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, part of the Office of Management and Budget, that really did all sorts of shenanigans in terms of forcing agencies not to submit rules unless they had accepted all of the comments from this particular review organization in the White House, or saying you can't submit a rule unless you withdraw a rule, or saying we don't want you to submit this rule, or being told by the White House, likely, we believe that, no, we don't want this rule to move forward because it has potential political implications for us. So we believe that there was a significant political component to delaying rules in that period in the run-up to the 2012 election, which unfortunately carried over into 2013 as well, because there was this huge backlog of rules that had just been backed up for more than a year and a half and close to 2 years. So that was certainly a key factor. The politics was certainly a key factor. But there's no doubt that industry is very, very adept at raising issues, raising concerns, raising uncertainty about the scientific basis of rules, raising concerns about how rules are going to be implemented and the potential impacts that those might have on their, on the economy and on their particular industries. And they are very adept, and they've been in this game for a long time. They know how to create uncertainty, how to create delay, and how to influence the regulatory process in a very, very direct way.
Well, I specifically have investigated over the years the for-profit college industry, which is truly egregious. You know, student debt now is equal to household debt, and the taxpayer subsidizes these for-profit colleges to the tune of about $33 billion a year. And they get aspiring vets and people from minority communities into these indentured deals, which is all taxpayers' money. They spend an enormous amount of money off taxpayer money, again, promoting themselves on television. You see every other day there's a new school popped out of nowhere. And their practices are so egregious that the White House did try to reform that through Cass Sunstein. And apparently at the last moment, the head of the Washington Post, Graham, who owns Kaplan, which is a big part of the for-profit college industry, sort of went to the White House and basically killed him because, you know, he had some clout. This is before he sold out to Amazon. So that's an example of the way the game is played. And I'm just curious to know, I mean, in terms of moral outrage, I don't think there's anything worse than ripping off kids who are trying to make it in the American dream and indenturing them for life with worthless diplomas.
Well, that, you know, I certainly understand, you know, your outrage about it. I think there are a lot of other outrages. There's outrages about the fact that some very, very important protections for our environment need to move forward, and hopefully will move forward in the next couple of years as this administration has a rapidly closing window to really get things done, which they in some cases have committed to, for example, in terms of fighting this problem, this huge problem that we have in terms of climate change and the greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change and global warming. And the administration laid out a climate action plan last year, indicating they were going to develop regulations on the emissions of these greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change for power plants, first for new power plants, which they have proposed, and now they're on schedule to do so for, which is much more important, for current existing power plants. Nobody's really talking about building new coal-fired power plants in the United States, but the rules that will be developed, hopefully, by this June, we'll see. That's the presidential order as part of the deadline in his in the president's climate action plan called for developing regulations for existing power plants by this June, and we hope the president holds EPA to that deadline as well. But certainly in terms of things like food safety, it's certainly a big issue. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who get sick every single year from contaminated food and that we know of, and probably thousands more that go unreported, thousands more cases of sickness from contaminated food. Now, Congress responded to the outbreaks that occurred over the last several years by passing new legislation that required the Food and Drug Administration to adopt new food safety rules. Those rules were supposed to be in place by July of 2012. Well, FDA is still in the process of issuing those regulations, still hasn't done it for all of the regulations that were supposed to be in place more than a year and a half ago. So clearly, there is still much to do, and this administration really has its work cut out for them. Another area is protecting workers. One of the rules that has been in limbo for more than two decades is protecting construction workers and other workers who work and are exposed to silica, which is a substance. It's the stuff that is like quartz that's in materials and causes lung cancer, and it causes disease silicosis, which robs people of their ability to breathe, and it causes renal disease and kidney disease. This is very, very serious stuff, and the Department of Labor, in terms of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is part of the Department of Labor, had been working on regulations to lower the exposure limit for worker exposure to silica for years and years and years. In fact, going back more than 20 years, still hadn't been done. Finally, in the last 9 months, things have moved forward after these rules were sitting in review, limbo, for more than a year. But we're only now getting to the point where just finalizing the opportunity for the public and industry and others to submit comments to OSHA. There'll be hearings next month, but it'll probably be another year to 2 years before this very important regulation that's been in the work for decades actually becomes reality. So these are just some of the examples of some of the delays that have occurred and some of the opportunities that still lie ahead in the next 2 to 3 years for the Obama administration.
But in terms of what the president pledged in his recent State of the Union to move forward with executive actions, specifically to raise the minimum wage for people working on government contracts, Does that pledge extend to what we're talking about? I mean,
no. I mean, you know, he mentioned you know, the climate change problem, greenhouse gas in passing, but he really didn't you know, highlight that, unfortunately. And none of these other areas that we've just been talking about really were included in the State of the Union. We had hoped they would be, and they weren't. So we have. We're part of a coalition called the Coalition for Sensible Safeguards. It's made up of many groups who are environmental groups and public interest groups protecting consumers and folks concerned about, organizations concerned about food safety and financial products and the and how banks and others operate in a way that protects the public interest. So it's a large, broad coalition of groups concerned about the safeguards that we have in our society. And this coalition sent a letter to the president, in fact, in January, asking him to really follow through on some of these commitments that are out there and to really take advantage of the next the remaining period of his administration to move a lot of these initiatives forward. We didn't really, you know, hear that in the State of the Union, but we're hoping still that we can weigh in and make some of these and take advantage of some of these opportunities that exist to really move the public interest agenda forward and really ensure that these public safeguards are in place.
Well, just in closing, though, in terms of the Wall Street reforms, the Dodd-Frank Reform Act that Congress passed, half of the rules have not been implemented, and they're being slow-walked, and we know how much pressure was put against trying to kill the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But the SEC, for example, they could move on transparency for corporations who put money into government as a way for citizens since the Citizens United decision, there's unlimited funds coming from people that don't have to, billionaires and corporations who don't have to reveal who they are. That's a loophole, I think, that could be really useful, particularly in this election year.
Yeah, there's no doubt that you know, that there still are significant delays in implementing the Dodd-Frank Act, and that in the area of financial reform, there's still a lot more work that needs to be done, and things have dragged on. There's no doubt about it. There is a real opportunity here for the Securities and Exchange Commission to really make some progress in protecting the public and providing transparency, as you've pointed out, in terms of how funds are being used for influencing how government operates. And that's sorely needed.
Well, Ron White, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ronald White, who's the Director of Regulatory Policy at the Center for Effective Government, where he focuses on the applications of scientific information in the development and implementation of public health policy, with specific interests including air pollution policy, chemical and nanotechnology risks, and environmental justice. Ron also serves in the Departments of Environmental Health Services, Epidemiology and Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and is a member of the State of Maryland's Air Quality Control Advisory Council. And previously he served in the Department of Environmental Health Sciences and Epidemiology at Johns Hopkins, where he also served as Deputy Director for the Johns Hopkins Risk Sciences and Public Policy Institute. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with Army veteran Kayla Williams about her new book, Plenty of Time When We Get Home, Love and Recovery in the Aftermath of War.